Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers with Slavko Bekovic and Charlie Romeliotis. I am Pat Boyle. We're going to get into the draft situation as we're about a month away from the proceedings in Vancouver and the Hawks having that third overall selection. We'll also touch on the Worlds in Slovakia as we move now out of Group A play into the quarterfinals action. But we kick off this edition of the Hawks Talk Podcast with Blackhawks defenseman Connor Murphy.
How you doing, Connor?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Out here at this the Hockey Fest here at the United Center. Good to see all these kids, different ages, different skill levels taking part in the street hockey. Did it take you back a little bit to your roots?
Yeah, I was talking with someone out there about how most of your childhood, I think, if you look back on the hours you spent playing the game, majority of them are played in those situations, just playing in the cul-de-sac or in a driveway, because obviously you get your limited few hours of ice time a week for practices with your teams, and you don't get that many touches on the puck, or you're standing in line or doing structure stuff and learning about systems and all that as a hockey player. So you get to mess around and play with a lot of your friends and have some heated long games that run day and night out on the street with a lot of the warmer climates. Obviously, it's only option you have, so it definitely hits home for a lot of hockey players.
So any fans out there that want to take part in it, it's going to take place at the United Center June 22nd, 23rd. Go to blackhawks.com/hockeyfest for details on that. I'll say to you, as we record this podcast, it's like 50 degrees outside. How's your summer going? Is that even, I mean, it's... The weather hasn't been great.
So. Yeah, it hasn't. I kind of like it because I was back home in Columbus for a few weeks and we had really nice weather. But I don't know, whatever reason, the allergies were hitting me this year. So I feel like I could breathe here, which is the sinuses get flogged. But no, it's summer's been good. It's been nice to get home to see some family and then back here training with Paulie and a few guys are in town. It's always nice to catch up.
So when you talk about the training and you're working with Paul Goodman and some of the guys that are staying in town, how much of it is off-ice workout? At what point do you start to mix a little bit of on-ice workout in?
Yeah, everyone's got their own philosophies. I've done it differently in some summers. I've even gone as far as one summer. I think I had my first skate before first off-ice workout. And sometimes there's certain things you want to work on. But here we're doing it in the way of training for just in the gym for, I believe, a month and a half before we get on the ice. There's things that you want to hockey's not, and skating's not the healthiest thing for your body and the hips and groin, so you want to get things kind of strengthened and evened out before you hit the ice, and you'll end up seeing more improvements when you can kind of build that strength up and then get on the ice and have a little quicker step.
When you took a look back at your season, obviously, you know, it started in December after you rehabbed the back situation. Yeah. What were you encouraged most about when you looked at your game and assessed it?
You're saying just looking at it after the season?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think confidence was a big thing for me, just being my second year with the team and being more comfortable with the guys and staff and organization and city. It's something that When you have that comfort level showing up to the rink every day, for whatever reason, it's easier to put your best foot forward and to go into games and feeling like you're really a part of things. It's definitely something to come to the Hawks. It being an original six franchise, it can be almost daunting to look at the history and look at how big of a thing it is as a whole, but when you can kind of break through that and get comfortable being a part of it, and focus on your own game and work toward what you do, your strengths, I think that's what ends up when you're able to settle in, and I felt a little more comfortable doing that.
From my vantage point, you really hit the ground running. I thought I was surprised with how physical you were to start right away, because I figured that would be a little bit of a mental hurdle. And then, oh, by the way, you enter and there's a new defensive system that's being implemented.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have a lot of different things going together. How difficult was it to, you know, return in early December? It's right around that, I think, that second eight-game losing skid.
Yeah.
And then you're also trying to pick up a man-on-man philosophy, or a man-on-half-man, as Jeremy likes to call it.
Yeah, no, that it was interesting. Like, with injuries, you're able to kind of sit back and have a different perspective. And I watched every game and a chunk of practices, and you could definitely see how kind of mentally it was wearing on guys going through a couple losing skids. And I just took the approach that, being out that long, I was just so excited to play hockey and play games and get back in, that it almost didn't matter what was going on as far as where we were at in the standings, or kind of how we were adjusting to different coaches and different systems and different parts of the year. I just blocked all that out and just felt I was so excited to play that I wanted to just get out there and compete and help the guys, because I was so disappointed being injured, not being able to be a part of the team and contribute how I felt I could right from the beginning. So that was just something I worked on, things being hurt on kind of mental side, and obviously physically getting stronger, and then just being so eager and desperate to play. It's easier to do that and block out certain distractions.
Can you explain to the fans a little bit what this defensive zone coverage is like, the priorities from a D-man's perspective? I know you defend from the middle out. He wants you to pressure the puck, but there must be checklists as far as the sorting goes, right? And can you give us a couple of those things so that the fan at home can understand a little bit more about this D-zone coverage?
Yeah, like in general, coaches implement systems just so that there can be some sort of guidelines that if things go wrong, or if you're out there and kind of second-guessing where you should be or who you should guard, it has that in place to make it clear. That way there's less thinking. So when that is integrated, like, first of all, mid-season, it's hard for it to become a second nature of how you play, because you have to think. And if you're thinking more than you should be in a game, you're usually not going to be playing as well, because it's a reactionary and competitive sport that way. So us with the D zone, we definitely played more of a man-on-man, where the simple way of saying it is, if I'm a defenseman on the right side net front and there's a guy coming to try to screen and tip a puck on our goalie, he's my guy, and if the puck squirts away and he skates to grab the puck, I'm supposed to be guarding him, and it's mano a mano, and he better not score sort of mindset. So there's that, and then you just adapt and you read plays after that, and there's scenarios that come up almost every game, and that's why people get confused and frustrated to see one game blow up and let up a bunch of goals, and some games us just look completely locked in. It's just different things happen. You play different teams that have different tactics that bring up different things to work on. So there's that, and just having awareness of your guy, and then awareness of that situation that's kind of progressed throughout the year, on how you adapt if a guy gets beat, is something that you're always working on.
You know, there were times where we would see, like, say your man would go, end up the puck going to the corner, and your D partner might have another player that's below the goal line, and you'll have two D men below the goal line.
Right.
The house is unprotected, or
it's
left up to the forwards.
Right.
Is are there certain checklists where you have to abandon your guy, or is the onus then put on the forwards to pick up you know, the house and
yeah,
protect
there's
that?
There's a lot of different situations where you have to, a lot of time, yeah, the net should never be left uncovered with anyone in front. But, yeah, sometimes it's hard because when you see your guy and you go to try to cover him, first you have to do is realize that everyone else is compact and kind of holding their side of the play responsible. And sometimes if a forward could be, because of the way the play developed, he could have fallen down on the boards and not recovered. And if I don't look to see that he's going to recover for me, then I can't run into the corner. So there are different scenarios that way. Yeah, it's obvious that you never want to leave a guy open in front. So if there's times like that, there's definitely misplays. But you hope that over time that those things just get sorted out.
And I think a full preseason exhibition games are really going to help you guys in that area. You were reminded in season just how quickly this business can change. Yeah. You know, Q gets relieved. Jeremy comes in. You're coming back. And, oh, by the way, in Philadelphia, they're going through a ton of change. Yeah. And your dad, Gord, is let go. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, like, the conversations that you guys had on the phone during, you know, stressful times. Yeah. I mean, at times, tumultuous times in both organizations, you know, yeah. change, I should say. Yeah. What was that like? What kind of dialogue did you and your dad have over that time?
Yeah, I'm lucky to have a dad that's been in the business, and he's been in the NHL for 30 years and just been through so many things in different organizations. And the one thing that I've learned kind of the last couple years of my career is more just about controlling what you can control. And whether you're a staff member or a player, it's you show up every day ready to work and put your work boots on and do whatever you can to your best ability to help the team win and contribute and work hard. And you can't, sometimes you can't control whether changes are going to be made. And whether you're a coach, if the team's playing poorly and loses, it's not, you can't control everyone, and then changes are going to be made. It's sometimes it's not, doesn't mean anyone's doing a bad job. It's just sometimes change could spark something that could create more wins. And it's a hostile league in the way that everyone wants to win right away. And if it's not happening, the way the salary cap and contracts are so tight, sometimes it's hard to change the team up completely, and staff changes end up being made. So there's no crystal ball that's easy looking to and solve things, and that's why it's a really hard job on managers and owners and everyone trying to make organizations the elite level and stay that way every year to win the cup.
It's also hard on teams, and like one thing that I was impressed with was, you know, you're going through a losing skid in December, and there's several guys in that room that, you know, have won. There's also a young nucleus that's beginning to take foot and take hold in that locker room. And none of it at least came to light outside of that locker room. Nobody ever heard of the, you know, the questioning of maybe this or that system or upset about, you know, so-and-so's play or whatever. Right. It was kept in-house if there was any. How did you guys keep it together in those tough weeks and then, oh, by the way, flip the script in, you know, kind of January, February and start playing, you know, playoff hockey?
Yeah, I don't know. There's obviously different mental, emotional sides that play into effect, but I think it just speaks to the count of certain players and how true pros they are, and how you look at our core guys who have been here with even example like being here with Q for so long, and then having that change and him being the only coach that they've known to have, and how hard that would be, even just me looking at it on the outside at them, and how hard to be able to show up to a game and have a different guy behind you on the bench. It's hard, but it shows these guys are true pros, and they know that that stuff's going to happen, and that you have to go back to, like I said, control. You have to elevate your game, and you have to be a pro, and you have to be an elite player that some of our guys are, that they can grab hold. And an example, you look at Kaner and the run he went on with that stretch of games and the points he put up was just ridiculous, and it just shows that they guys strive to be great and they want to win, and it's unacceptable to lose in everyone's mind, and no matter what time of the year or what's going on, they want to push forward and play well.
Two off seasons ago, Kane said, "This can't be a team of veterans and young guys. It's got to be a team that has that comes together." Do you feel that the young players now are starting to have a strong voice in that locker room?
Yeah, you can feel it. You can feel it as the year changes. It's definitely harder adding into that when a young guy is European or whatever that is. There's that natural tendency to be quiet and to try to not outspeak anyone, and you have a lot of older players you want to respect and don't want to overstep your boundaries. You want to gain that respect from your teammates. So you see that as the year goes on, and those guys gain confidence with their game, and they can tell teammates have so much respect for them that you naturally feel a part of it. And there's definitely discussions. We talk in the room about how close we need to be and how much of a trust factor there has to be between everyone in order to go far and win. And it's hard to make the playoffs and hard to win the cup. And it's definitely something that is important for everyone to feel a part of it, no matter where you are in the lineup or what age you are, in order to have success.
Last one for you. I know priority-wise, the team will have certain priorities. Improving team defense, the penalty kill will be talked about quite a bit. But personal priorities, what are you looking at for yourself as you set out next season?
There's obviously the standard things you work on in the gym, and this year in the years past I've kind of jumped around from being home and being in Chicago and training, and this year being able to stay with Pauly and train the whole summer with him I think will be important, and then adapting and having the ice, and there's some different kind of mental skill stuff I've been working on, and trying to watch a little more videotape of games back from season past to work on the hockey side of things, along with getting your body in better shape and nutrition. And it's fun that we have a lot of great staff here that the Hawks provide us that give us all the tools to kind of get to that top level and peak shape that you want to be at to perform at your best. So while I'm here, I'm just extremely fortunate and wanting to take advantage of that and be around and soak everything in.
Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the rest of the summer.
Oh, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Get all of your Blackhawks news in the palm of your hand with the My Teams app by NBC Sports. The best place to stream the games, watch highlights, read articles, and more. Download the My Teams app today.
Back on the Hawks Talk podcast with Charlie Romeliotis and Slavko Bekovic. I am Pat Boyle. All right, we heard from Connor before the break there. Let's get into some draft conversation, shall we? It's pretty much been on our plate now since draft lottery night. And we're about a month away from the big draft in Vancouver. And we're, you know, when we spoke to Mark Kelly a couple weeks back, he said there's six or seven guys that they were kind of focusing on to possibly take in that third overall selection. You got to think it's been whittled down now to a handful. Have they had that conversation whether or not who Stan wants, who Mark is leaning towards, who other people within the hockey ops side of things for the Hawks, who they feel? We kind of gone over the group, but like, let's kind of reshape it and kind of look at those six or seven guys, five, six, seven guys. Of course, the Bowen Byram being one of them, Dylan Cousins, Kirby Dach, Alex Turcotte, Trevor Zegras, Caulfield. I think we got just about everybody there. Did we miss anyone?
Potentially Podkolzin, if they're willing to wait. Which
it's so crazy.
His stock seems to be plummeting.
So I went back and kind of gave a listen to our emergency podcast when it first came out, and even the Craig Button interview from a couple weeks after the lottery. And it's so crazy to think how our perceptions have changed on who they could potentially draft. Because I remember we went into that Craig interview and we weren't even planning on discussing defensemen, you know, and then we come out of there and it's like, okay, Bowen Byram could be a real possibility. And then I think right after the Blackhawks got third, everyone was kind of sliding Vasily Podkolzin into that three spot. And now it's like this draft has changed entirely. I don't know if it's because of the information, you know, we're obviously not draft experts, so we don't know exactly know the players, but it just seemed like all of the draft experts dropped Podkolzin and had Byram moving up to the Blackhawks, and it's just crazy how much it's evolved.
It's funny too, because when you go back to our first conversation, that you weren't supposed to overreact to tournament play and the under 18s and what goes on in the world. Remember, Craig Button said as much. Yep. He goes, you know, I'm not, if Kako has an amazing Worlds, I'm not going to put him over Hughes, and I'm not going to look at what Hughes was able to do or not do in under 18 and forecast it. Yet, Podkolzin seemingly dropped like a rock out of the top 10, by and large, because of his play in the under 18. And then there's that KHL situation that looms.
And then Bowen Byram on the opposite side basically tore up the playoffs in the Western Hockey League and led his team into the Memorial Cup.
He's the only one left. He was the first defenseman ever in WHL history to lead the playoff in scoring. Like, that is, and he is 17 years old.
And you heard Craig mention the Scott Niedermeyer comparison, and that's mainly just because of the production. And Byram's done nothing to slow any of those talks. So in a way, it's, you can see Byram's stock rising and a guy like Podkolzin's stock falling, because Podkolzin played at U18, did not produce until he had a pretty good gold medal game. On the opposite end, the only guy who still has an opportunity to raise his stock by playing in games is Bowen Byram. He's not disappointed. So you're seeing one guy who maybe was 5, 6, 7, 8 in that range when we first heard that the Hawks were going to be picking third. Now he's the unanimous number one defenseman in this class and arguably the number 3 prospect in the class.
Yeah, and probably the surest bet in the class, Bowen Byram. If you believe that he's going to be a true number one, and you know, look, there's, you look at the 5 or 6 that we just mentioned, and you know, Cousins, Doc, Turcotte, Zegras, Caulfield, they're pretty much, I think they're all going to have really good NHL careers. Mm-hmm. Some will obviously have better ones than others, but Byram does seem to be almost a sure bet. And we always talk about best player available or need. And honestly, with where the Hawks are at, I think need creeps into the equation here more, only because, look, if you're building a team from the ground up, you take the best player available.
Yeah.
But that's not the situation the Hawks are in right now. They're trying to build a team. They've stocked themselves with several young defensemen who are close to joining the NHL. And they've got some Hall of Fame players that are on the back nine. So, you know, in a vacuum, you'd say, oh, you can't have enough number one defensemen. If Byram is actually better than Joki Haru, Boqvist, Beaudin, and Mitchell, take them. Boom. But then you also think, too, what if those guys are not that much worse than Byram, or projected to be not that much worse than Byram, or very close? Or maybe there's some thought that one of those guys is equal to or could surpass what Byram brings to the table. And then you factor in the reality of where the team is at right now and the clock running on guys like Kane and Taves and the need for forward depth as well. That's where I, you know, I struggle. And later, we're going to get to our top three. We're going to take that 6 or 7 or whatever group that we've been kind of talking about for the last few weeks, and each of us are going to give us the 3 finalists that we think the Hawks are considering at number 3. Your thoughts on, like, need versus best player available?
Yeah, it's the Hawks are in such an interesting spot because their biggest need is probably a top 4 defenseman, right? Because Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, DeBrincat.
It's definitely.
It is a top 4 defenseman. But then when you look at the organization, you look at the pipeline, they have all these defensemen coming. And then you look at the forward, they probably don't need a high-end forward right now. They need depth, but in three...
I disagree with that. Well, I think they need a high-end forward.
Well,
I think they need a high-end center.
Compared to their immediate need of a defenseman.
True.
I don't think it's an immediate priority.
True.
But Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, they're going to be 33 in 2 years. And then you're going to need that next, you know, we're going to list off all these great young centers and forwards in this draft that they could potentially get. That player is going to become way more valuable in the coming years when Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews start to decline a little bit and Alex DeBrincat and Dylan Strome are kind of like this new core. But that's what the Hawks are going to be weighing at number three is Bowen Byram might be able to step into the lineup. I don't know if he'll be able to step in immediately, but as soon as next year, this guy seems to be an all-world defenseman in all areas. I don't know if he's going to be in a, you know, Craig Button says he projects him to be a number one defenseman. He doesn't toss that around. So if that's the guy, like, he could be a changer for your defense. But at the same time, the Blackhawks also are going to need a legit high-end forward, a franchise-changing forward at number three up front if they don't.
But if you're not expecting Byram to come in and play and contribute and play pretty solid minutes right away, you run into the same issue that we've discussed with all the other defensemen, is that, okay, maybe Boqvist needs another year, or Beaudin gets a year in the AHL before he's ready to play in the NHL. Mitchell's obviously going to Denver. He's going to come back after being a captain. You don't want to bring three or four guys in as rookies in full-time roles all in one season. Now you're looking at, what, the 2020-21 season. I think the value of the top five centers that you have at the top of this draft is more important for the long-term, big-picture need of the Blackhawks compared to what you need as far as defensemen. You can probably get a guy who, even though Byram is the hands-down number one defenseman in this class, there might be some guys later on in the draft that you've evaluated and said, you know what, he's not Bowen Byram, he's not a number one, but he's another valuable guy that we'd like to add into that pipeline. So rather than have Byram as my first pick and then a center later on that you're not really thrilled with, take the guy that plays down the middle at number three, and if you want to add more defensemen to the system, maybe look later in the second, third, yeah, whatever rounds.
And there's been some talk, too, as you look deeper into the draft, there's you know, some of the less offensive-minded defensemen that would be available in the second round. It's a really an interesting dilemma because – you know, you bring up when these guys are going to break. And I think for sure Joakim Harju, and I think they'd like to see Boqvist
agreed
start the season with the big club next year. I think you'd love to see two of those guys, of the four we mentioned, play next year with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, I've said it for a while now. I think you have to give Adam Boqvist at least that 9-game tryout before you burn the first year of his entry-level deal. You have to give him that 9-year tryout, see where he stands or compares to his peers. I don't want to say peers, it's going to be men. I mean, he's going to be playing against men next year. See where he stands, and then you kind of make the decision.
And don't forget, Boqvist impressed them in training camp last year and in the preseason. They like what they saw.
You know, the other thing, too, is if you're trying to find one of those guys, let's say Erik Gustafsson gets off to an unbelievable start and picks up where he left off last year. All of a sudden, internally, you're discussing, hey, is Beaudin or Mitchell, do they have the potential to be Erik Gustafsson? And all of a sudden, you're like, you're looking to find what you may have to give away only because he wasn't a high-end draft pick. Where the thought might be, well, let's not let him get away. We found him. Why roll the dice on, you don't want to waste picks. But you also don't want to be foolish and let a guy walk and spend your resources another way. Use that defenseman depth in your system to go out and get a player of need on a forward basis. If you think, Gustafsson is a long-term fit here and not just we're going to try to move him at the trade deadline if we're not in the playoff picture for draft equity, or we're going to let him walk out the door at the end of the year for nothing.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think the biggest question mark of all of this is what is his next contract going to look like?
Yep. Right.
Because you got to be prepared to pay him, especially if he takes the next step. You know, I think he was almost a point-per-game player after he had that healthy scratch earlier in the year. And, like, if he replicates that next season, like, he's going to get paid a lot of money, and his term is going to look very long. And I just think the reality of the situation of what you were touching on, Slavko, like all four of those big four defenseman prospects that we talk about, they're not all going to be wearing Blackhawks sweaters. Like, it's just the math doesn't work. So, like, the Hawks are also developing to make a lot of these guys valuable. I don't think they're fixated on who's going to be part of the long-term plan and who isn't. I think the market, you know, develops and you see what the market is for this player, this prospect or whatever. I just think that's what the Blackhawks are trying to do with all these defensemen. It's not necessarily breaking them all in at the same time. I just think you're gonna reach a point where, okay, this guy's NHL ready, but we don't have room for him. Right. So we might have to fill this need by acquiring forward.
At some point, they just become assets that you have in your system because they don't have the playing time. And, you know, Charlie, you wrote the article last week about the Rockford Ice Hogs roster's already starting to get pretty set in stone. Where are you going to get ice time for any of these guys? So if you're starting to bring them all in together, you have to get some out the door. And if you are developing them like, you know, the Blackhawks have tried and they've brought them in and they have a plan for Boqvist and they have a plan for Beaudin and they want their value to stay high or get higher, that can't hurt you in the long run. Either they're going to contribute for you in the NHL or they're valuable trade assets.
Yeah, and by that, maybe they're one of the sweeteners to move a Seabrook. You know, you take a first-round draft pick who has shown some promise before reaching the NHL, and they become the sweetener to take the final years of a Seabrook deal. And therefore, Team X gets Seabrook, who can be a good fifth or sixth defenseman for the next 2 to 3 years, and they potentially have the guy to fill his spot
with a much higher ceiling.
Much higher ceiling, obviously young and being a first-round pick. You know, maybe you have to deal from that area, especially if you really are considering going after Bowen Byram. I think you'd almost have to include, because it's just a logjam of youthful defensemen that all cannot play at the same time.
Right. It would just take a lot of money eating as well on that. Even like I don't think a sweetener itself would do it. It's just tough. I mean, the salary cap keeps going up. Like the Seabrook contract is obviously like it's the elephant in the room. It's difficult to swallow, but he still adds value in a third pairing role. He's just not worth what he's making right now. And I, if the salary cap continues to improve,
but then you get the buyout too. So like Team X could say, look, we're going to get it. I mean,
I wonder how that works out with his no movement clause. Would he be eligible for, you know, like, I don't know how that works.
Well, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, the no movement clause, we've always been told eventually if you want a player to be moved, they don't want to stay in a situation where they're not wanted. And it's easier said than done. And Brent has got a legacy here in Chicago.
You guys love him in the dressing room.
Yeah, we've discussed this. You know, I'm just saying, like, if there's a team out there that isn't salary cap strapped and could take his $6 million and say, okay, look, this is not – is he a $6 million player? Absolutely not. But he's going to serve as a great fifth or sixth defenseman for us. We've got the luxury right now to overpay at this position. He's going to bring some leadership. He's a clutch player. And I get, you know, the sweetener is really the other end. I've got a guy who's on his entry-level contract who I could pretty much move in to the NHL in the next year or two.
You might need more than one sweetener.
Yeah, I'm sure you may.
I mean, think about it. Just to get rid of 1 year of Bickle's contract, you had to give up Teravainen.
Oh.
Now, think about getting rid of 3+ years of Brent Seabrook's contract. You're going to have to get rid of something that the other team is sure of what they're going to get.
I think a very underrated part about the Blackhawks moving up from 12 to 3 is that every other round also got moved up from 12 to 3. So the Blackhawks are going to be picking 35th in the second round.
Yeah.
That's essentially a late first round pick. So,
and they've done well in that range.
Oh, absolutely.
They've done very well in that range.
Brinkett.
So we look at the pipeline now, and their pipeline is being like replenished very, very well. Like we even talk about the Ryan Hartman trade. They ended up getting Philip Kurashev out of that deal,
right?
Nicholas Beaudin.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like, man, like those are sneaky good deals that are very valuable to the Blackhawks that we're going to look back from now or, you know, however many years and be like, man, if they don't make that move, they don't make this trade or whatever,
right? But I just think, like, again, if we're building this team
with the target date of 3 years from now, the thought process is different of winning. Like, say your championship window begins, but then when you're dealing in the reality of Crawford getting older and nearing the end of a deal, Kane, Taves, Keith needing that better defenseman next to him to take him to a level that we're used to seeing him play at, or at least close to. You know, when you factor those things in, is if you're still committed to those guys, that United Center can't go a third straight Stanley Cup playoff without a game in it. It just can't. It can't.
I agree. And I think a huge part of this whole equation is that the Blackhawks are going to be getting, let's just say, a Joki Haru, a Boqvist, whoever they draft, whether he plays in the NHL next year or the year after that. These guys are going to be on entry-level contracts. So, I mean, a huge reason the Blackhawks won three Stanley Cups was because Kane and Taze were on their entry levels for the first one, and then the second one, the two and three, they were on their bridge deals. So, like, they absolutely have to maximize these next 3-4 years when Kane and Taze are still making the big bucks. They're aging, but they also have these, you know, these number three overall pick, and Joki Haru and Bocas, those guys are going to be on their entry-level contracts as well.
The good news is the organization right now as a whole is in a pretty good spot with the amount of cap space they have, how much they've replenished the organization as far as their depth. They have room to wiggle, and they've got assets. So, it's a crucial offseason for Stan Bowman, to say the least.
Yeah.
All right, so it is May 21st as we tape this podcast. On June 21st, the Blackhawks will make their pick in Vancouver. So let's boil this down to your three finalists that you think the Blackhawks are considering. And then at a later podcast down the road, we'll have each guy come up with the one that they think they're going to pick. And Charlie, you start us off. Give us your three finalists.
So I think right now, Bowen Byram and Alex Turcotte are separating themselves as a potential target at number three. So I'm going to include them in my two, out of two of my three. And then the one guy I think that is making a very strong case, I think Cole Caulfield is in there, but I don't think the Blackhawks will take Cole Caulfield. The guy that seems like he's quickly rising on the draft boards is Trevor Zegras. And I think he's probably the guy. You could maybe lump him in with Dylan Cousins because of those guys. I just think Trevor Zegras is a guy that is going to be highly considered. And, I mean, he was fantastic. For a lot of people called him the most talented player on Team USA in their program. So he's my third guy.
When you look at what Jack Hughes has done to separate himself from everybody else on that team that has all these loaded prospects, six guys could potentially be first-round picks. The fact that they're saying, well, Zegras is very similar to Jack Hughes in a lot of ways, might actually have better vision and better passing, that immediately makes you, okay, all right, I need to watch some more video of this guy. He's a little bit smaller, but he's got a lot of those same tools. To me, though, it's still Cousins, Turcotte, and Byram. And I don't think anybody would have considered Byram until we realized just the potential that this kid has and the fact that he is himself separating himself from the rest of the defensemen. I think Broberg is maybe a close-ish second, but there's still, it's Byram and then everybody else. Just like in this draft class, realistically, you can argue it's Hughes and everybody else or Hughes, Kako and everybody else. I think it's Turcotte, Byram, and Cousins for me. Cousins, the combination of size and speed, 6'3", at 18 and how fast he moves and the motor that he's got, in a lot of ways, I think he has all the attributes that the Blackhawks would love to see in a guy as far as his playmaking ability, his speed, and his willingness and desire to play hockey and be 100% hockey all the time. And I think that's something that we'll find out about at the Combine when they interview all these guys.
I'm in almost lock agreement with you guys. I think Alex Turcotte is one of my three for sure. Bowen Byram is also in the final three. Turcotte's coach, under 18 coach, said sandpaper and silk.
I love that.
To describe that. And there's been comparisons to, he's a Brad Marchand at the center position. And one thing that stuck out in our conversation with Mark Kelly when we talked about players with an edge, I don't know if you remember, he kind of sat up and he's like, oh yeah, you know, like we're not just talking skill all the time or playmaking all the time.
We also realize to win in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you need that stuff, that fearless type of player who can go to the tough areas and do things. And that, to me, when you hear those comparisons that people make with Turcotte, that's for sure a reason why.
Zach Parise is another one.
Yeah.
Another guy that you'd love to have on your team.
So then I'm between the other two guys. I agree with you. I think Zegras has made some big jumps. Where Podkolzin has gone down, Zegras yep. has moved from the teens into the top.
He, to me, is this year's Kotkaniemi. The guy that when the lottery happened, you're like, all right, you know, he's probably somewhere in the 8 to 15 range. And then all of a sudden, a week before the draft, you're like, oh, shoot, the Montreal Canadiens want this guy number 3.
So here's where I'm thinking. I'm thinking the Hawks love the fact that Dylan Cousins is a two-way player. That he has size at 6'3", 185, and he has speed, and he uses that. So to me, I think they're going to think to themselves, man, I got a guy that I could put on that third line with the potential to move him up to a second line role in the next, you know, 1 to 3 years. So I think my final three are Turcotte, Byram, and Dylan Cousins. But again, We all, I think, had Podkolzin as our guy
could be
a month and a half ago, right?
But to be fair, we taped that podcast like half hour after the draft.
I mean, I was going lottery, by, you know, 10 other guys' mock drafts. And
and he was at the time the unanimous like number 3 guy. And the U18 is just...
The one thing I do really like about Alex Turcotte is that he is cut from the same cloth as Jonathan Toews, Ryan O'Reilly, Patrice Bergeron, those two-way centermen. I was watching videos of his shift by shifts, and like when he is so good, and I can very much be. He's also a Chicago kid, and the one thing Mark Kelly said about him, highly competitive, and the Blackhawks organization loves that.
All right, we're up against the clock here, boys, because this podcast studio needs to be used for some other things. The Worlds, we've seen now Group A play come to an end. That's moved now. The different groups into a quarterfinal action. It'll be U.S. versus Russia. Canada will take on Switzerland. Finland and Sweden. The Czech Republic will take on Germany. When you look at what the Hawks have done so far, Kane leading the way with points, held off the score sheet against Team Canada. DeBrincat's also had a really, really strong Worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. And Patrick Kane obviously has picked up where he left off when he led the tournament at the Worlds last year. I think it's just going to be interesting in general for Team USA. I thought this was the year that they were going to be able to do it. I just don't know if they have the goaltending. I still think they're...
Corey Schneider doing it for you.
Thatcher Demko, you know.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to see like a Jonathan Quick there, someone that could actually stabilize that position. But, I mean, all the Blackhawks, up and down the lineup, the Blackhawks players and prospects are producing.
Here's the two guys that I've been impressed with. Dominik Kubalik, who we're expecting a contract to become official with the Blackhawks as soon as this tournament's over. 7 games for the Czech Republic, 4 goals. After DeBrincat, he's got more goals than anybody else representing the Hawks, potentially. He's a +9 in 7 games. The Czech Republic's looked really good. And Kevin Lankinen, who was down in Rockford for a chunk of this season and in net, boy, oh boy, has he been impressive. .938 save percentage, .140 for Finland.
I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, we all assume that next year it's going to be Corey Crawford battling it out with
Colin Delia.
Colin Delia as the backup because he signs that 2-year, $2 million contract. But this could throw a little, like if Lankinen has a great preseason, could you see them? Because he's in the final year of his deal, right?
I think the best case scenario, because you're a little bit more confident with what you've got in Delia. He backs up Crawford all year, and Lankinen starts a majority of the games in the AHL. And you let him have the reins and see what you got, assuming Forsberg's not back.
I think they want to see Lankinen do what Delia did last year, where they see a full season of him, see how he controls and handles the load, and then they see. But that's a good option that he's breaking out like this.
All right, that's a wrap on this edition of the Hawks Talk podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers, for Slavko, for Charlie, for... Connor Murphy and Blackhawks PR for setting that up. Thank you very much. I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening to the Hawks Talk podcast. We'll catch you next time.